darkness, and carrying only sticks. We're being fools. Out of the darkness came the answer.
Windy?
Irritably, Ralph shook himself. This was all Jack's fault. Course I am, but we're still being fools.
If you don't want to go on, said the voice, sarcastically, I'll go up by myself.
Ralph heard the mockery and hated Jack. The sting of ashes in his eyes, tiredness, fear, enraged him. Go on, then. We'll wait here. There was silence. Why don't you go? Are you frightened? A stain in the darkness, a stain that was Jack, detached itself and began to draw away.
All right. So long.
The stain vanished. Another took its place. Ralph felt his knee against something hard and rocked a charred trunk that was edgy to the touch. He felt the sharp cinders that had been bark push against the back of his knee and knew that Roger had sat down. He felt with his hands and lowered himself beside Roger while the trunk rocked among invisible ashes. Roger, uncommunicative by nature, said nothing. He offered no opinion on the beast, nor told Ralph why he had chosen to come on this mad expedition. He simply sat and rocked the trunk gently. Ralph noticed a rapid and infuriating tapping noise and realized that Roger was banging his silly wooden stick against something. So they sat, the rocking, tapping, impervious Roger and Ralph fuming. Round them the close sky was loaded with stars, save where the mountain punched up a hole of blackness. There was a slithering noise high above them, the sound of someone taking giant and dangerous strides on rock or ash. Then Jack found them and was shivering and croaking in a voice they could just recognize as his.
I saw a thing on top.
They heard him blunder against the trunk, which rocked violently. He lay silent for a moment, then muttered,
Keep a good lookout. It may be following.
A shower of ash pattered round them. Jack sat up.
I saw a thing bulge on the mountain.
You only imagined it, said Ralph shakily, because nothing would bulge, not any sort of creature. Roger spoke. They jumped, for they'd forgotten him.
A frog.
Jack giggled and shuddered.
Some frog. There was a noise, too, a kind of plop noise. Then the thing bulged.
Ralph surprised himself not so much by the quality of his voice, which was even, but by the bravado of its intention. We'll go and look. For the first time since he had known Jack, Ralph could feel him hesitate.
Now?
His voice spoke for him, of course. He got off the trunk and led the way across the clinking cinders up into the dark, and the others followed. Now that his physical voice was silent, the inner voice of reason and other voices too made themselves heard. Piggy was calling him a kid. Another voice told him not to be a fool. And the darkness and desperate enterprise gave the night a kind of dentist's chair unreality. As they came to the last slope, Jack and Roger drew near, changed from ink stains to distinguishable figures. By common consent, they stopped and crouched together. Behind them, on the horizon, was a patch of lighter sky where in a moment the moon would rise. The wind roared once in the forest and pushed their rags against them. Ralph stirred. Come on. They crept forward, Roger lagging a little. Jack and Ralph turned the shoulder of the mountain together. The glittering lengths of the lagoon lay below them, and beyond that a long white smudge that was the reef. Roger joined them. Jack whispered,
Let's creep forward, on hands and knees. Maybe it's asleep.
Roger and Ralph moved on, this time leaving Jack in the rear for all his brave words. They came to the flat top where the rock was hard to hands and knees. A creature that bulged. Ralph put his hand in the cold, soft ashes of the fire and smothered a cry. His hand and shoulder were twitching from the unlooked-for contact. Green lights of nausea appeared for a moment and ate into the darkness. Roger lay behind him, and Jack's mouth was at his ear.
Over there, where there used to be a gap in the rock. A sort of hump. See?
Ashes blew into Ralph's face from the dead fire. He could not see the gap or anything else because the green lights were opening again and growing, and the top of the mountain was sliding sideways. Once more, from a distance, he heard Jack's whisper,
"Scared."
Not scared so much as paralyzed, hung up here, immovable on the top of the diminishing, moving mountain. Jack slid away from him. Roger bumped, fumbled with a hiss of breath, and passed onwards. He heard them whispering,
"Can you see anything?" "There!"
In front of them, only 3 or 4 yards away, was a rock-like hump where no rock should be. Ralph could hear a tiny chattering noise coming from somewhere, perhaps from his own mouth. He bound himself together with his will, fused his fear and loathing into a hatred, and stood up. He took 2 leaden steps forward. Behind them, the sliver of moon had drawn clear of the horizon. Before them, something like a great ape was sitting asleep, with its head between its knees. Then the wind roared in the forest. There was confusion in the darkness, and the creature lifted its head, holding towards them the ruin of a face. Ralph found himself taking giant strides among the ashes, heard other creatures crying out and leaping, and dared the impossible on the dark slope. Presently the mountain was deserted, save for the 3 abandoned sticks and the thing that bowed. Chapter 8. Gift for the Darkness. Piggy looked up miserably from the dawn-pale beach to the dark mountain.
"Are you sure? Really sure, I mean?"
"I told you 12 times now," said Ralph. "We saw it."
"Do you think we're safe down here?"
"How the hell should I know?"
Ralph jerked away from him and walked a few paces along the beach. Jack was kneeling and drawing a circular pattern in the sand with his forefinger. Piggy's voice came to them, hushed.
"Are you sure? Really? Go up and see,"
said Jack contemptuously.
"And good riddance. No fear."
"The beast had teeth," said Ralph, "and big black eyes."
He shuddered violently. Piggy took off his 1 round of glass and polished the surface.
"What are we going to do?"
Ralph turned towards the platform. The conch glimmered among the trees, a white blob against the place where the sun would rise. He pushed back his mop.
"I don't know."
He remembered the panic flight down the mountainside.
"I don't think we'd ever fight a thing that size, honestly. You know, we'd talk, but we wouldn't fight a tiger. We'd hide. Even Jack'd hide."
Jack still looked at the sand.
"What about my hunters?"
Simon came stealing out of the shadows by the shelters. Ralph ignored Jack's question. He pointed to the touch of yellow above the sea.
"As long as there's light, we're brave enough. But then, and now that thing squats by the fire as though it didn't want us to be rescued."
He was twisting his hands now, unconsciously.
His voice rose. "So we can't have a signal fire. We're beaten."
A point of gold appeared above the sea, and at once all the sky lightened.
"What about my hunters?"
"Boys armed with sticks."
Jack got to his feet. His face was red as he marched away. Piggy put on his 1 glass and looked at Ralph.
"Now you've done it. You've been rude about his hunters."
"Oh, shut up."
The sound of the inexpertly blown conch interrupted them. As though he was serenading the rising sun, Jack went on blowing till the shelters were astir, and the hunters crept to the platform, and the little ones whimpered as now they so frequently did. Ralph rose obediently, and Piggy, and they went to the platform.
Talk, said Ralph bitterly. Talk, talk, talk.
He took the conch from Jack.
This meeting,
Jack interrupted him.
I called it. If you hadn't called it, I should have. You just blew the conch. Well, isn't that? Oh, take it. Go on, talk.
Ralph thrust the conch into Jack's arms and sat down on the trunk.
I've called an assembly, said Jack, because of a lot of things. First, you know now, we've seen the beast. It crawled up. We were only a few feet away. The beast sat up and looked at us. I don't know what it does. We don't even know what it is.
The beast comes out of the sea, out of the dark. Trees...
Quiet, shouted Jack. You listen. The beast is sitting up there, whatever it is.
Perhaps it's waiting. Hunting.
Yes, hunting.
Hunting, said Jack. He remembered his age-old tremors in the forest.
Yes, the beast is a hunter. Only shut up. The next thing is that we couldn't kill it. And the next thing is that Ralph said my hunters are no good.
I never said that.
I've got the conch. Ralph thinks you're cowards running away from the boar and the beast. And that's not all.
There was a kind of sigh on the platform, as if everyone knew what was coming. Jack's voice went on, tremulous yet determined, pushing against the uncooperative silence.
He's like Piggy. He says things like Piggy. He isn't a proper chief.
Jack clutched the conch to him.
He's a coward himself.
For a moment he paused, and then went on.
On top, when Roger and me went on, he stayed back.
I went too.
After.
The two boys glared at each other through screens of hair.
I went on too, said Ralph. Then I ran away. So did you.
Call me a coward then.
Jack turned to the hunters.
He's not a hunter. He'd never have got us meat. He isn't a prefect and we don't know anything about him. He just gives orders and expects people to obey for nothing.
All this talk, shouted Ralph. Talk, talk. Who wanted it? Who called the meeting?
Jack turned, red in the face, his chin sunk back. He glowered up under his eyebrows.
All right, then, he said, in tones of deep meaning and menace. All right.
He held the conch against his chest with one hand and stabbed the air with his index finger.
Who thinks Ralph oughtn't to be chief?
He looked expectantly at the boys ranged round, who had frozen. Under the palms there was deadly silence.
Hands up, said Jack strongly. Whoever wants Ralph not to be chief.
The silence continued, breathless and heavy, and full of shame. Slowly the red drained from Jack's cheeks, then came back with a painful rush. He licked his lips and turned his head at an angle so that his gaze avoided the embarrassment of linking with another's eye.
How many think?
His voice tailed off. The hands that held the conch shook. He cleared his throat and spoke loudly.
All right, then.
He laid the conch with great care in the grass at his feet. The humiliating tears were running from the corner of each eye.
I'm not going to play any longer. Not with you.
Most of the boys were looking down now, at the grass or their feet. Jack cleared his throat again.
I'm not going to be part of Ralph's lot.
He looked along the right-hand logs, numbering the hunters that had been a choir.
I'm going off by myself. He can catch his own pigs. Anyone who wants to hunt when I do can come too.
He blundered out of the triangle towards the drop to the white sand.
Jack!
Jack turned and looked back at Ralph. For a moment he paused, and then cried out, high-pitched, enraged.
No!
He leapt down from the platform and ran along the beach, paying no heed to the steady fall of his tears, and until he dived into the forest, Ralph watched him. Piggy was indignant.
I've been talking, Ralph, and you just stood there like...
Softly, looking at Piggy and not seeing him, Ralph spoke to himself. He'll come back. When the sun goes down, he'll come. He looked at the conch in Piggy's hand. What?
Well, there,
Piggy gave up the attempt to rebuke Ralph. He polished his glass again and went back to his subject.
We can do without Jack Meridew. There's others besides him on this island. But now we really got a beast, though I can't hardly believe it. We'll need to stay close to the platform. There'll be less need of him and his hunting. So now we can really decide on what's what.
There's no help, Piggy. Nothing to be done. For a while they sat in depressed silence. Then Simon stood up and took the conch from Piggy, who was so astonished that he remained on his feet. Ralph looked up at Simon. Simon, what is it this time? A half sound of jeering ran round the circle, and Simon shrank from it.
I thought there might be something to do. Something we...
Again the pressure of the assembly took his voice away. He sought for help and sympathy and chose Piggy. He turned half towards him, clutching the conch to his brown chest.
I think we ought to climb the mountain.
The circle shivered with dread. Simon broke off and turned to Piggy, who was looking at him with an expression of derisive incomprehension.
What's the good of climbing up to this here beast when Ralph and the other two couldn't do nothing?
Simon whispered his answer.
What else is there to do?
His speech made, he allowed Piggy to lift the conch out of his hands. Then he retired and sat as far away from the others as possible. Piggy was speaking now with more assurance, and with what, if the circumstances had not been so serious, the others would have recognized as pleasure.
I said we could all do without a certain person. Now I say we got to decide on what can be done. And I think I could tell you what Ralph's going to say next. The most important thing on the island is the smoke, and you can't have no smoke without a fire.
Ralph made a restless movement.
No go, Piggy, we've got no fire. That thing sits up there. We'll have to stay here.
Piggy lifted the conch as though to add power to his next words.
We got no fire on the mountain. But what's wrong with a fire down here? A fire could be built on them rocks, on the sand even. We'd make smoke just the same.
That's right, smoke by the bathing pool.
The boys began to babble. Only Piggy could have the intellectual daring to suggest moving the fire from the mountain.
So we'll have the fire down here, said Ralph.
He looked about him.
We can build it just here between the bathing pool and the platform.
Of course, he broke off, frowning, thinking the thing out, unconsciously tugging at the stub of a nail with his teeth.
Of course, the smoke won't show so much, not be seen so far away. But we needn't go near the...
The others nodded in perfect comprehension. There would be no need to go near.
We'll build the fire now.
The greatest ideas are the simplest. Now there was something to be done, they worked with passion. Piggy was so full of delight and expanding liberty in Jack's departure, so full of pride in his contribution to the good of society, that he helped to fetch wood. The wood he fetched was close at hand, a fallen tree on the platform that they did not need for the assembly. Yet to the others, the sanctity of the platform had protected even what was useless there. Then the twins realized they would have a fire near them as a comfort in the night, and this set a few little uns dancing and clapping hands. The wood was not so dry as the fuel they had used on the mountain. Much of it was damply rotten and full of insects that scurried. Logs had to be lifted from the soil with care, or they crumbled into sodden powder. More than this, in order to avoid going deep into the forest, the boys worked near at hand on any fallen wood, no matter how tangled with new growth. The skirts of the forest and the scar were familiar, near the conch and the shelters, and sufficiently friendly in daylight. What they might become in darkness, nobody cared to think. They worked, therefore, with great energy and cheerfulness, though as time crept by, there was a suggestion of panic in the energy and hysteria in the cheerfulness. They built a pyramid of leaves and twigs, branches and logs, on the bare sand by the platform. For the first time on the island, Piggy himself removed his one glass, knelt down, and focused the sun on Tinder. Soon there was a ceiling of smoke and a bush of yellow flame. The Littlans, who had seen few fires since the first catastrophe, became wildly excited. They danced and sang, and there was a partyish air about the gathering. At last Ralph stopped work and stood up, smudging the sweat from his face with a dirty forearm. "We'll have to have a small fire. This one's too big to keep up." Piggy sat down carefully on the sand and began to polish his glass.
"We could experiment. We could find out how to make a small hot fire and then put green branches on to make smoke. Some of them leaves must be better for that than the others."
As the fire died down, so did the excitement. The Littlans stopped singing and dancing and drifted away towards the sea or the fruit trees or the shelters. Ralph flopped down in the sand.
"We'll have to make a new list of who's to look after the fire.
If you can find them."
He looked round. Then, for the first time, he saw how few biggins there were and understood why the work had been so hard. "Where's Morris?" Piggy wiped his glass again.
"I expect... No, he wouldn't go into the forest by himself, would he?"
Ralph jumped up, ran swiftly round the fire, and stood by Piggy, holding up his hair.
"But we've got to have a list. That's you and me and Sam Nerrick and..."
He would not look at Piggy, but spoke casually. "Where's Bill and Roger?" Piggy leaned forward and put a fragment of wood on the fire.
"I expect they've gone. I expect they won't play either."
Ralph sat down and began to poke little holes in the sand. He was surprised to see that one had a drop of blood on it. He examined his bitten nail closely and watched the little globe of blood that gathered where the quick was gnawed away. Piggy went on speaking.
"I seen them stealing off when we was gathering wood. They went that way, the same way as he went himself."
Ralph finished his inspection and looked up into the air. The sky, as if in sympathy with the great changes among them, was different today, and so misty that in some places the hot air seemed white. The disk of the sun was dull silver, as though it was nearer and not so hot, yet the air stifled.
"They've always been making trouble, haven't they?"
The voice came near his shoulder and sounded anxious.
"We can do without them. We'll be happier now, won't we?"
Ralph sat. The twins came, dragging a great log and grinning in their triumph. They dumped the log among the embers so that sparks flew.
"We can do all right on our own, can't we?"
For a long time, while the log dried, caught fire, and turned red hot, Ralph sat in the sand and said nothing. He did not see Piggy go to the twins and whisper with them, nor how the three boys went into the forest.
"Here you are."
He came to himself with a jolt. Piggy and the other two were by him. They were laden with fruit.
"I thought perhaps," said Piggy, "we ought to have a feast, kind of."
The three boys sat down. They had a great mass of fruit with them, and all of it properly ripe. They grinned at Ralph as he took some and began to eat. "Thanks," he said. Then, with an accent of pleased surprise, "Thanks."
"Do all right on our own," said Piggy. "It's them that haven't no common sense that make trouble on this island. We'll make a little hot fire."
Ralph remembered what had been worrying him. "Where's Simon?"
"I don't know." "You don't think he's climbing the mountain?"
Piggy broke into noisy laughter and took more fruit.
"He might be."
He gulped his mouthful.
"He's cracked."
Simon had passed through the area of fruit trees, but today the Littlans had been too busy with the fire on the beach, and they had not pursued him there. He went on among the creepers until he reached the great mat that was woven by the open space and crawled inside. Beyond the screen of leaves, the sunlight pelted down, and the butterflies danced in the middle their unending dance. He knelt down, and the arrow of the sun fell on him. The other time the air had seemed to vibrate with heat, but now it threatened. Soon the sweat was running from his long, coarse hair. He shifted restlessly, but there was no avoiding the sun. Presently he was thirsty, and then very thirsty. He continued to sit. Far off along the beach, Jack was standing before a small group of boys. He was looking brilliantly happy.
"Hunting," he said.
He sized them up. Each of them wore the remains of a black cap, and ages ago they had stood in two demure rows, and their voices had been the song of angels.
"We'll hunt. I'm going to be chief."
They nodded, and the crisis passed easily.
"And then, about the beast."
They moved, looked at the forest.
"I say this, we aren't going to bother about the beast."
He nodded at them.
"We're going to forget the beast."
"That's right. Yes, forget the beast."
If Jack was astonished by their fervour, he did not show it.
"And another thing, we shan't dream so much down here. This is near the end of the island."
They agreed passionately out of the depths of their tormented private lives.
"Now listen, we might go later to the Castle Rock, but now I'm going to get more of the biggins away from the conch and all that. We'll kill a pig and give a feast."
He paused and went on more slowly.
"And about the beast, when we kill, we'll leave some of the kill for it. Then it won't bother us, maybe."
He stood up abruptly.
"We'll go into the forest now and hunt."
He turned and trotted away, and after a moment they followed him obediently. They spread out nervously in the forest. Almost at once Jack found the dug and scattered roots that told of pig, and soon the track was fresh. Jack signalled the rest of the hunt to be quiet, and went forward by himself. He was happy, and wore the damp darkness of the forest like his old clothes. He crept down a slope to rocks and scattered trees by the sea. The pigs lay, bloated bags of fat, sensuously enjoying the shadows under the trees. There was no wind, and they were unsuspicious, and practice had made Jack silent as the shadows. He stole away again and instructed his hidden hunters. Presently they all began to inch forward, sweating in the silence and heat. Under the trees an ear flapped idly. A little apart from the rest, sunk in deep maternal bliss, lay the largest sow of the lot. She was black and pink, and the great bladder of her belly was fringed with a row of piglets that slept or burrowed and squeaked. 15 yards from the drove, Jack stopped, and his arm, straightening, pointed at the sow. He looked round in inquiry to make sure that everyone understood, and the other boys nodded at him. The row of right arms slid back.
"Now!" The drove of pigs started up, and at a range of only 10 yards, the wooden spears with fire-hardened points flew towards the chosen pig. One piglet, with a demented shriek, rushed into the sea, trailing Roger's spear behind it. The sow gave a gasping squeal and staggered up with two spears sticking in her fat flank. The boys shouted and rushed forward, the piglets scattered, and the sow burst the advancing line and went crashing away through the forest.
"After her!"
They raced along the pig track, but the forest was too dark and tangled, so that Jack, cursing, stopped them and cast among the trees. Then he said nothing for a long time, but breathed fiercely, so that they were awed by him, and looked at each other in uneasy admiration. Presently he stabbed down at the ground with his finger.
"There!"
Before the others could examine the drop of blood, Jack had swerved off, judging a trace, touching a bough that gave. So he followed, mysteriously right and assured, and the hunters trod behind him. He stopped before a covert.
"In there!"
They surrounded the covert, but the sow got away with the sting of another spear in her flank. The trailing butts hindered her, and the sharp cross-cut points were a torment. She blundered into a tree, forcing a spear still deeper, and after that any of the hunters could follow her easily by the drops of vivid blood. The afternoon wore on, hazy and dreadful with damp heat. The sow staggered her way ahead of them, bleeding and mad, and the hunters followed, wedded to her in lust, excited by the long chase and the dropped blood. They could see her now, nearly got up with her, but she spurted with her last strength and held ahead of them again. They were just behind her when she staggered into an open space where bright flowers grew and butterflies danced round each other, and the air was hot and still. Here, struck down by the heat, the sow fell, and the hunters hurled themselves at her. This dreadful eruption from an unknown world made her frantic. She squealed and bucked, and the air was full of sweat and noise and blood and terror. Roger ran round the heap, prodding with his spear whenever pig flesh appeared. Jack was on top of the sow, stabbing downward with his knife. Roger found a lodgment for his point and began to push till he was leaning with his whole weight. The spear moved forward inch by inch, and the terrified squealing became a high-pitched scream. Then Jack found the throat, and the hot blood spouted over his hands. The sow collapsed under them, and they were heavy and fulfilled upon her. The butterflies still danced, preoccupied in the centre of the clearing. At last, the immediacy of the kill subsided. The boys drew back, and Jack stood up, holding out his hands. "Look!" He giggled and flicked them, while the boys laughed at his reeking palms. Then Jack grabbed Morris and rubbed the stuff over his cheeks. Roger began to withdraw his spear, and the boys noticed it for the first time. Robert stabilized the thing in a phrase which was received uproariously.
"Right up her ass!
Did you hear? Did you hear what he said? Right up her ass!"
This time Robert and Morris acted the two parts, and Morris's acting of the pig's efforts to avoid the advancing spear was so funny that the boys cried with laughter. At length even this palled. Jack began to clean his bloody hands on the rock. Then he started work on the sow and paunched her, lugging out the hot bags of coloured guts, pushing them into a pile on the rock while the others watched him. He talked as he worked.
"We'll take the meat along the beach. I'll go back to the platform and invite them to a feast. That should give us time."
Roger spoke.
"Chief."
"Hmm?"
"How can we make a fire?"
Jack squatted back and frowned at the pig.
"We'll raid them and take fire. There must be four of you, Henry and you, Bill and Morris. We'll put on paint and sneak up. Roger can snatch a branch while I say what I want. The rest of you can get this back to where we were. We'll build the fire there. And after that..."
He paused and stood up, looking at the shadows under the trees. His voice was lower when he spoke again. "But we'll leave part of the kill for..." He knelt down again and was busy with his knife. The boys crowded round him. He spoke over his shoulder to Roger.
"Sharpen a stick at both ends."
Presently he stood up, holding the dripping sow's head in his hands.
"Where's that stick?"
"Here."
"Ram one end in the earth. Oh, it's rock. Jam it in that crack. There."
Jack held up the head and jammed the soft throat down on the pointed end of the stick, which pierced through into the mouth. He stood back, and the head hung there, a little blood dribbling down the stick. Instinctively, the boys drew back too, and the forest was very still. They listened, and the loudest noise was the buzzing of flies over the spilled guts. Jack spoke in a whisper.
"Pick up the pig."
Morris and Robert skewered the carcass, lifted the dead weight, and stood ready. In the silence, and standing over the dry blood, they looked suddenly furtive. Jack spoke loudly.
"This head is for the beast.
It's a gift. The silence accepted the gift and awed them. The head remained there, dim-eyed, grinning faintly, blood blackening between the teeth. All at once they were running away, as fast as they could, through the forest, towards the open beach. End of Disc 4. Lord of the Flies, Disc 5. Simon stayed where he was, a small brown image concealed by the leaves. Even if he shut his eyes, the sow's head still remained like an after-image. The half-shut eyes were dim with the infinite cynicism of adult life. They assured Simon that everything was a bad business.
I know that.
Simon discovered that he had spoken aloud. He opened his eyes quickly, and there was the head grinning amusedly in the strange daylight, ignoring the flies, the spilled guts, even ignoring the indignity of being spiked on a stick. He looked away, licking his dry lips. A gift for the beast. Might not the beast come for it? The head, he thought, appeared to agree with him. Run away, said the head silently. Go back to the others. It was a joke, really. Why should you bother? You were just wrong, that's all. A little headache, something you ate, perhaps. Go back, child, said the head silently. Simon looked up, feeling the weight of his wet hair, and gazed at the sky. Up there, for once, were clouds, great bulging towers that sprouted away over the island, grey and cream and copper-coloured. The clouds were sitting on the land. They squeezed, produced moment by moment this close, tormenting heat. Even the butterflies deserted the open space where the obscene thing grinned and dripped. Simon lowered his head, carefully keeping his eyes shut, then sheltered them with his hand. There were no shadows under the trees, but everywhere a pearly stillness, so that what was real seemed elusive and without definition. The pile of guts was a black blob of flies that buzzed like a saw. After a while, these flies found Simon. Gorged, they alighted by his runnels of sweat and drank. They tickled under his nostrils and played leapfrog on his thighs. They were black and iridescent green and without number. And in front of Simon, the Lord of the Flies hung on his stick and grinned. At last Simon gave up and looked back, saw the white teeth and dim eyes, the blood, and his gaze was held by that ancient, inescapable recognition. In Simon's right temple, a pulse began to beat on the brain. Ralph and Piggy lay in the sand, gazing at the fire and idly flicking pebbles into its smokeless heart.
That branch is gone.
Where's Sam Nerick?
We ought to get some more wood. We're out of green branches.
Ralph sighed and stood up. There were no shadows under the palms on the platform, only this strange light that seemed to come from everywhere at once. High up among the bulging clouds, thunder went off like a gun.
We're going to get buckets of rain. What about the fire?
Ralph trotted into the forest and returned with a wide spray of green, which he dumped on the fire. The branch crackled, the leaves curled, and the yellow smoke expanded. Piggy made an aimless little pattern in the sand with his fingers.
Trouble is, we haven't got enough people for a fire. You got to treat Sam and Eric as one turn. They do everything together.
Of course.
Well, that isn't fair, don't you see? They ought to do two turns.
Ralph considered this and understood. He was vexed to find how little he thought like a grown-up, and sighed again. The island was getting worse and worse. Piggy looked at the fire.
You'll want another green branch soon.
Ralph rolled over. Piggy, what are we going to do?
Just have to get on without him.
But the fire. He frowned at the black and white mess in which lay the unburned ends of branches. He tried to formulate. I'm scared. He saw Piggy look up and blundered on. Not of the beast. I mean, I'm scared of that too, but nobody understands about the fire. If someone threw you a rope when you were drowning, if a doctor said, take this because if you don't take it, you'll die, you would, wouldn't you? I mean,
of course I would.
Can't they see? Can't they understand? Without the smoke signal, we'll die here. Look at that. A wave of heated air trembled above the ashes, but without a trace of smoke. We can't keep one fire going. And they don't care. And what's more? He looked intensely into Piggy's streaming face. What's more? I don't, sometimes. Supposing I got like the others, not caring. What had become of us? Piggy took off his glasses, deeply troubled.
I don't know, Ralph. We just got to go on, that's all. That's what grown-ups would do.
Ralph, having begun the business of unburdening himself, continued. Piggy, what's wrong? Piggy looked at him in astonishment.
Do you mean the...
No, not it. I mean, what makes things break up like they do? Piggy rubbed his glasses slowly and thought. When he understood how far Ralph had gone towards accepting him, he flushed pinkly with pride.
I don't know, Ralph. I expect it's him.
Jack?
Jack.
A taboo was evolving round that word, too. Ralph nodded solemnly. Yes, he said. I suppose it must be. The forest near them burst into uproar. Demoniac figures with faces of white and red and green rushed out howling so that the little ones fled screaming. Out of the corner of his eye, Ralph saw Piggy running. Two figures rushed at the fire, and he prepared to defend himself, but they grabbed half-burnt branches and raced away along the beach. The three others stood still, watching Ralph, and he saw that the tallest of them, stark naked save for paint and a belt, was Jack. Ralph had his breath back and spoke. Well, Jack ignored him, lifted his spear, and began to shout,
Listen, all of you. Me and my hunters, we're living along the beach by a flat rock. We hunt and feast and have fun. If you want to join my tribe, come and see us. Perhaps I'll let you join. Perhaps not.
He paused and looked round. He was safe from shame or self-consciousness behind the mask of his paint, and could look at each of them in turn. Ralph was kneeling by the remains of the fire like a sprinter at his mark, and his face was half hidden by hair and smut. Sam Nerick peered together round a palm tree at the edge of the forest. A little un howled, creased and crimson by the bathing pool, and Piggy stood on the platform, the white conch gripped in his hands.
Tonight we're having a feast. We've killed a pig and we've got meat. You can come and eat with us if you like.
Up in the cloud canyons, the thunder boomed again. Jack and the two anonymous savages with him swayed, looked up, and then recovered. The little un went on howling. Jack was waiting for something. He whispered urgently to the others.
Go on, now.
The two savages murmured. Jack spoke sharply.
Go on.
The two savages looked at each other, raised their spears, and spoke in time.
The chief has spoken.
Then the three of them turned and trotted away. Presently Ralph rose to his feet, looking at the place where the savages had vanished. Sam Nerick came, talking in an awed whisper.
I thought it was, and I was scared.
Piggy stood above them on the platform, still holding the conch. That was Jack and Morris and Robert, said Ralph. Aren't they having fun?
I thought I was going to have asthma.
Sucks to your asthma.
When I saw Jack, I was sure he'd go for the conch. Can't think why.
The group of boys looked at the white shell with affectionate respect. Piggy placed it in Ralph's hands, and the Littlans, seeing the familiar symbol, started to come back.
Not here.
He turned towards the platform, feeling the need for ritual. First went Ralph, the white conch cradled, then Piggy, very grave, then the twins, then the Littlans and the others. Sit down, all of you. They raided us for fire. They're having fun, but the... Ralph was puzzled by the shutter that flickered in his brain. There was something he wanted to say. Then the shutter had come down. But the... They were regarding him gravely, not yet troubled by any doubts about his sufficiency. Ralph pushed the idiot hair out of his eyes and looked at Piggy.
But the... Oh, the fire, of course. The fire.
He started to laugh, then stopped, and became fluent instead. The fire's the most important thing. Without the fire, we can't be rescued. I'd like to put on war paint and be a savage, but we must keep the fire burning. The fire's the most important thing on the island, because... He paused again, and the silence became full of doubt and wonder. Piggy whispered urgently,
"Rescue!"
"Oh, yes. Without the fire, we can't be rescued. So we must stay by the fire and make smoke." When he stopped, no one said anything. After the many brilliant speeches that had been made on this very spot, Ralph's remarks seemed lame, even to the Littlans. At last, Bill held out his hands for the conch.
"Now we can't have the fire up there. Because we can't have the fire up there, we need more people to keep it going. Let's go to this feast and tell them the fire's hard on the rest of us. And then hunting and all that, being savages, I mean, must be jolly good fun."
Sam Nerick took the conch.
"That must be fun, like Bill says. And as he's invited us to a feast, meat crackling. Oh, I could do with some meat."
Ralph held up his hand. "Why shouldn't we get our own meat?" The twins looked at each other. Bill answered,
"We don't want to go in the jungle."
Ralph grimaced.
"He, you know, goes. He's a hunter. They're all hunters. That's different."
No one spoke for a moment. Then Piggy muttered to the sand, "Meat." The Littlans sat solemnly thinking of meat and dribbling. Overhead, the cannon boomed again, and the dry palm fronds clattered in a sudden gust of hot wind.
"You are a silly little boy," said the Lord of the Flies. "Just an ignorant, silly little boy."
Simon moved his swollen tongue, but said nothing.
"Don't you agree?" said the Lord of the Flies. "Aren't you just a silly little boy?"
Simon answered him in the same silent voice.
"Well then," said the Lord of the Flies, "you'd better run off and play with the others. They think you're batty. You don't want Ralph to think you're batty, do you? You like Ralph a lot, don't you? And Piggy? And Jack?"
Simon's head was tilted slightly up. His eyes could not break away, and the Lord of the Flies hung in space before him.
"What are you doing out here all alone? Aren't you afraid of me?"
Simon shook.
"There isn't anyone to help you. Only me. And I'm the beast."
Simon's mouth labored, brought forth audible words.
"Pig's head on a stick.
Fancy thinking the beast was something you could hunt and kill," said the head.
For a moment or two, the forest and all the other dimly appreciated places echoed with the parody of laughter. You knew, didn't you? I'm part of you? Close, close, close. I'm the reason why it's no go, why things are what they are. The laughter shivered again. Come now, said the Lord of the Flies. Get back to the others, and we'll forget the whole thing. Simon's head wobbled. His eyes were half closed, as though he were imitating the obscene thing on the stick. He knew that one of his times was coming on. The Lord of the Flies was expanding like a balloon. This is ridiculous. You know perfectly well you'll only meet me down there, so don't try to escape. Simon's body was arched and stiff. The Lord of the Flies spoke in the voice of a schoolmaster. This has gone quite far enough. My poor misguided child, do you think you know better than I do? There was a pause. I'm warning you. I'm going to get waxy. Do you see? You're not wanted. Understand? We are going to have fun on this island, understand? We are going to have fun on this island, so don't try it on, my poor misguided boy, or else. Simon found he was looking into a vast mouth. There was blackness within, a blackness that spread. Or else, said the Lord of the Flies, we shall do you. See? Jack and Roger and Morris and Robert and Bill and Piggy and Ralph. Do you see? Simon was inside the mouth. He fell down and lost consciousness. Chapter 9. A View to a Death. Over the island, the build-up of clouds continued. A steady current of heated air rose all day from the mountain and was thrust to 10,000 feet. Revolving masses of gas piled up the static until the air was ready to explode. By early evening, the sun had gone and a brassy glare had taken the place of clear daylight. Even the air that pushed in from the sea was hot and held no refreshment. Colours drained from water, and trees, and pink surfaces of rock, and the white and brown clouds brooded. Nothing prospered but the flies, who blackened their lord, and made the spilt guts look like a heap of glistening coal. Even when the vessel broke in Simon's nose, and the blood gushed out, they left him alone, preferring the pig's high flavour. With the running of blood, Simon's fit passed into the weariness of sleep. He lay in the mat of creepers while the evening advanced, and the cannon continued to play. At last he woke, and saw dimly the dark earth close by his cheek. Still he did not move, but lay there, his face sideways on the earth, his eyes looking dully before him. Then he turned over, drew his feet under him, and laid hold of the creepers to pull himself up. When the creepers shook, the flies exploded from the guts with a vicious note and clamped back on again. Simon got to his feet. The light was unearthly. The Lord of the Flies hung on his stick like a black ball. Simon spoke aloud to the clearing. What else is there to do? Nothing replied. Simon turned away from the open space and crawled through the creepers till he was in the dusk of the forest. He walked drearily between the trunks, his face empty of expression, and the blood was dry round his mouth and chin. Only sometimes, as he lifted the ropes of creeper aside and chose his direction from the trend of the land, he mouthed words that did not reach the air. Presently the creepers festooned the trees less frequently, and there was a scatter of pearly light from the sky down through the trees. This was the backbone of the island, the slightly higher land that lay beneath the mountain, where the forest was no longer deep jungle. Here there were wide spaces interspersed with thickets and huge trees, and the trend of the ground led him up as the forest opened. He pushed on, staggering sometimes with his weariness, but never stopping. The usual brightness was gone from his eyes, and he walked with a sort of glum determination, like an old man. A buffet of wind made him stagger, and he saw that he was out in the open, on rock, under a brassy sky. He found his legs were weak, and his tongue gave him pain all the time. When the wind reached the mountain top, he could see something happen, a flicker of blue stuff against brown clouds. He pushed himself forward, and the wind came again, stronger now, cuffing the forest heads till they ducked and roared. Simon saw a humped thing suddenly sit up on the top and look down at him. He hid his face and toiled on. The flies had found the figure too. The lifelike movement would scare them off for a moment so that they made a dark cloud round the head. Then, as the blue material of the parachute collapsed, the corpulent figure would bow forward, sighing, and the flies settle once more. Simon felt his knees smack the rock. He crawled forward, and soon he understood. The tangle of lines showed him the mechanics of this parody. He examined the white nasal bones, the teeth, the colours of corruption. He saw how pitilessly the layers of rubber and canvas held together the poor body that should be rotting away. Then the wind blew again, and the figure lifted, bowed, and breathed foully at him. Simon knelt on all fours and was sick till his stomach was empty. Then he took the lines in his hands. He freed them from the rocks, and the figure from the wind's indignity. At last he turned away and looked down at the beaches. The fire by the platform appeared to be out, or at least making no smoke. Further along the beach, beyond the little river, and near a great slab of rock, a thin trickle of smoke was climbing into the sky. Simon, forgetful of the flies, shaded his eyes with both hands and peered at the smoke. Even at that distance, it was possible to see that most of the boys, perhaps all the boys, were there. So they had shifted camp then, away from the beast. As Simon thought this, he turned to the poor broken thing that sat stinking by his side. The beast was harmless and horrible, and the news must reach the others as soon as possible. He started down the mountain, and his legs gave beneath him. Even with great care, the best he could do was a stagger.
"Bathing," said Ralph. "That's the only thing to do."
Piggy was inspecting the looming sky through his glass.
"I don't like the clouds. Remember how it rained just after we landed?"
"Going to rain again."
Ralph dived into the pool. A couple of little uns were playing at the edge, trying to extract comfort from a wetness warmer than blood. Piggy took off his glasses, stepped primly into the water, and then put them on again. Ralph came to the surface and squirted a jet of water at him.
"Mind my specs," said Piggy. "If I get water on the glass, I got to get out and clean them."
Ralph squirted again and missed. He laughed at Piggy, expecting him to retire meekly as usual and in pained silence. Instead, Piggy beat the water with his hands.
"Stop it," he shouted. "Do you hear?"
Furiously, he drove the water into Ralph's face.
All right," said Ralph. "Keep your hair on."
Piggy stopped beating the water.
"I got a pain in my head. I wish the air was cooler."
"I wish the rain would come."
I wish we could go home.
Piggy lay back against the sloping sand side of the pool. His stomach protruded and the water dried on it. Ralph squirted up at the sky. One could guess at the movement of the sun by